This is a special edition of Earth Ancients, and I welcome you back if you've been listening to my guest, Richard Hoagland, and his work on the book, The Monuments of Mars. This is part two of my interview, and we drill into just what the artificiality is, what they suspect it could be, and the players, the parts that are currently in motion for more disclosure, for more evidence of ancient technology and ancient unknown civilization on the planet Mars. Almost 2 hours of additional data in this program here on Earth Ancients. Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. This is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey, welcome back. This is Cliff, the host of Earth Ancients. So I hope you're doing well. We are about to deliver part two of the Richard Hoagland interview on Mars, and part two gets into much more about what we can expect through the eyes of the rover camera, through the eyes of the Chinese orbiter currently orbiting the planet Mars, and perhaps, according to Richard, if NASA, JPL, does not give up the evidence, the Chinese will probably force them to reveal what they've known for a good 30 years. Hey, from the beginning of the earliest missions to Mars, the Viking satellites, and then the early probes, we have spent, or the United States has spent tens of billions of dollars to find microbes. But it's quite evident to a lot of people and to many of the guests we have here on Earth Ancients that they have found advanced ruins of a very old race of beings. Perhaps when they begin excavating some of these places, we'll get a sense of what type of hominins were on the planet. I've seen really interesting video footage of what people believe are the remains of hominins like ourselves. And, you know, we don't know if these are Homo sapiens sapien, if this is a completely new species of hominin, if they're even related. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing if they did some research and they found that the hominins on Mars are a branch of Earth-based hominins, or a group that spun off from an early Mars civilization of hominins? I mean, that would really be fascinating. I mean, any way you look at it, whatever we discover that is created from beings, it's going to change us profoundly, not only on an evolutionary scale, but it's going to change us, our perception of our place in the cosmos, what it means to be an Earthling. And my hope is that it opens the door to welcoming Earth to a consortium of planets and also the representatives of those planets. So, I mean, it's like an episode out of Star Trek where we fly and we find, we travel the universe and we find habitated planets that are habitated, and we begin relations. We begin working with them. I mean, as crazy as that sounds to a lot of people, I'm welcoming that, and I hope it happens in our lifetime, or at least my lifetime. So, Mars represents a turning point, and Richard Hoagland presents a little bit of it. He's more optimistic than a lot of other people we've had on the show. Mark Carlotto looks at it scientifically. So does John Brandenburg, George Haass, and others. But I think we have to be optimistic. And I am very optimistic about what's happening and what is going to be found on Mars. And I'll keep prodding NASA, JPL, until they open things up. I mean, it really makes it interesting when you have the Arabs orbiting the planet and taking images, and you have the Chinese who have unlimited resources to create boosters, rockets, to take satellites and rovers to Mars. I mean, I don't really know how they, if they are working with NASA, JPL, on their program. There's a great deal of speculation that a lot of their data and scientific prowess comes from the Americans. And I don't know if that's studying our rockets, studying our rovers, or they get classified data. It's just, we just don't know. But their rover is pretty cool. And if you've seen the images coming back from the moon, and what they present on Mars is going to be just really fun to see. So I'm really welcoming the images that come back from China. And I hope that they are I hope they do open them up and begin to distribute them to the world, those of us here on planet Earth. So I really don't think that they will be hampered by the Brookings Institute report. So, and I laugh because, you know, and I've said it on the last show, it has restricted those of us in the United States from really getting the data. It's been hidden. It's been covered up. And I for one, am ready for disclosure. So, all right. So here we go. Part two with Richard Hoagland, the Monuments of Mars. This is a short program. In terms of segments, we won't hear from Bruce. We won't hear from anyone else. It'll be jumping right into part two of Richard Hoagland and the Monuments of Mars, an update. So here we go. As promised, here is part two of my interview with Richard Hoagland, the author of The Monuments of Mars and The Dark Mission, which is the story of NASA, which he co-wrote with Mike Barra. All right, this is a little more in-depth, more of his not only detailed analysis of some of the artificiality that he found, but also his collaborative work with the other team members that he assembled following the Face on Mars discovery. So here is part two with Richard Hoagland. So we want to cover some of the artificial structures since the discovery of the face, because obviously JPL has imaged a great deal, if not the entire planet, many, many times. And I'd like you to start off by talking about the different cameras, because the Viking mission had a very rudimentary camera. I mean, the best for that time period. But what we got now is state-of-the-art times 10, I would think, don't we?
Yes.
And so we're provided seeing real close-ups. So.
Provided they let you see the real data.
Yeah, that's the tough one.
Okay, so let's go back. I saw the face on Mars at JPL.
Yeah.
That morning, officially. My next hit was many years later at a conference in Boulder, Colorado, a Mars conference, when I met Pietro Molinar and saw their work. And I realized, you know, at that moment that this was not trivial. This was really, really, really important. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, you know, was in the back of my mind. And then I was at another conference in, I think, Los Angeles, and someone asked me if I could assemble evidence of what we would do, we as a planet, in case we were invaded by an extraterrestrial civilization, you know, harking back to Margaret Mead. And it was in the process of doing that report that I realized that there needed to be a really serious analysis of what DiPietro Molinar had found, which was that the face was not a trick of light and shadow. It was a three-dimensional structure. You could model it. And then right next door, from my measurements, there were all these pyramids. So I set up at SRI in the next few months this independent Mars investigation. This was now 1983. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I'm skipping huge swaths of this. It's all in the book.
Yeah, it's in the
Monuments
book.
Of Mars. But I really lucked out in having an amazing team, which included Carlotto and Brandenburg and Lambert Dolphin and, you know, Wren Breck. I mean, many very important people in the early years, and it's all in the book. And one of the things we had to do was to establish what would be called an epistemological criteria for how do you tell when you found evidence of an ancient civilization. I mean, what kind of scientific criteria would you use? You know, the face was both the come hither, and it was a terrible trap, as I said, in Monuments. Because the same thing about the face that caused us to pay attention was also the same set of things that could cause, you know, academia, NASA, whatever, to dismiss it as merely a trick of light and shadow.
Let me stop you right there. That's a good point. And I have never asked you this, but was Malin in charge of the rover back then? Are the imaging? Yeah, it was, I think. Mark Malin?
Malin was not involved in Viking.
Okay, not in Viking. But what my question is, did you submit some of the evidence or what you believed was best kept evidence to JPL?
No, I submitted it to the White House.
Oh.
Remember, NASA, well, come on. You know, in a political game, you go to the top and you get an order from the top down.
What was the result of that?
Well, let me tell you the story. NASA serves at the pleasure of the president. Every administration, new administration, picks its NASA administrator. We've gone through, I forget how many administrators since Kennedy, you know, picked the original. Actually, technically, it was Eisenhower who picked the original. Then Kennedy, you know, picked his new guy, who turned out to be a guy named James Webb, for whom the Webb telescope is named. Hmm. And he was brilliant. He was a genius at managing. He actually came out of the Truman administration as head of the what do they call that? The there's a term in the executive branch, the Department of the Budget. There's a longer term, and I forget it. Anyway, so the president tells NASA what it would like to see, and NASA then responds scientifically, supposedly. So I wanted to do an end run around NASA because at this point I realized that NASA was hopeless. They would continue to lie and obfuscate, and it was in this time frame that I found Brookings, and I found the bureaucratic, you know, thing they were hiding behind. Oh, we can't tell them about what's on Mars. It'll destroy civilization. And that was a cover story. Come on, we're 30 years now past the drop-dead date of Brookings. So yeah. I got to know a friend from Canada, of all places, who was ultimately named on President Reagan's Space Commission. Remember how President Reagan set up a space commission to talk about, you know, things like a space station? Yeah. What to do with the outer planets, you know. So I had the ear of a key member of the President's Space Commission. So David and I, his name was David Webb, we had all kinds of adventures in Washington, you know, running around. And can you imagine? I mean, this is like, for me, it's kind of like that movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Because being squired around by an official representative of a presidential commission who was willing to take my evidence to the President of the United States. At the same time, we're opening up a gambit with the Soviet Union through a back channel to try to see if the Soviets could get to be interested. And the thing I was most concerned about was that both sides, remember the Cold War was at the height back then, hot and heavy, 50,000 nuclear warheads aimed at each other. You know, the threat of nuclear war was not trivial in those days. And what the worst case scenario was, one side would realize that we were right. There were ruins, ancient ruins of another civilization on Mars. And they would rush off to Mars to get access to the libraries, to the technology, the super advanced physics, all of the things that appeared in the ruins to be there if you just went there and were serious. Mm-hmm. And my fear was, and it really was a fear, that one side would do it, the other side wouldn't, and then later they would realize the first side had an unparalleled advantage in the Cold War, and they would do something to basically try to stop that, and that would result in World War III. Very serious consideration when you're dealing with all the marbles. I mean, can you imagine having access to a civilization that could extend over half the galaxy and have records going back millions of years of God knows how many cultures, and it's all available if you just find the libraries.
Right.
Anyway, so I started a back channel, and it's all in monuments, to the Soviets, all culminating in a meeting that Carl Sagan and I were attending at the National Academy of Sciences one evening, and Roland Sigdayoff, who was then head of the unmanned Soviet space program, was in attendance. And if you've ever seen any of the interiors of the National Academy, it's like the Capitol, except even better. There's all these huge paintings, and there's a dome overhead illustrating, you know, God giving science to humanity. Or I guess it's, you know, Prometheus giving fire to humanity, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Under that dome, I meet with the head of the Soviet unmanned space program, and I have a copy of our SRI report on the independent Mars investigation. And I'm able, over cocktails, we're standing around, you know, holding glasses and all that, and I'm able to hand him this report in person with the KGB standing around looking at me very suspiciously, you know, guys with bulges under their, you know, left armpits.
Right.
Anyway, so Sigdayoff very solemnly takes my document, which is many, you know, multiple inches thick, and he looks at me and he says in perfect English, "Oh, I've already seen this." Well, of course he had. The KGB looked at everything that we did in those days. And that was the beginning of our effort to try to get us all to go together. And I remember Sagan testifying on Capitol Hill as to, you know, why there should be a joint mission to Mars. And this was one of the reasons, the hidden reasons.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because the Soviets spent a tremendous amount of money imaging the Phobos moons, and they ran into some trouble. In fact, they lost an entire craft on, is it Phobos? I think Phobos 2.
Yep, yep. And do you know what they found out from their other Phobos mission, which survived for a while, that then led to the sudden disappearance of the second mission? You don't.
No.
I'm going to tell you. The Russians / the Soviets, because back then it was the Soviet Union, with Phobos 1 and 2, their first missions to Mars, well, not the first, but the first that were really loaded to do decent science.
Yeah.
They found out that Phobos, the inner Martian moon, is hollow.
Yeah.
And right after that, their mission disappeared. Just poof. And they sent an astronaut named Marina Popovich around the world on a propaganda mission claiming that it had been shot down by aliens.
I had her at the expo.
Total.
In San Francisco.
You remember. Total propaganda. Total propaganda. Because, of course, by a scientific society, as soon as you mention aliens and ray guns and, you know, they just tune out.
Yeah.
It was another disinformation effort on the part of the Soviets to keep Americans from taking it seriously while they did exactly as we had feared when we were setting up this back channel. Anyway, the whole Church of Soap Opera is told in great detail in The Monuments of Mars, as a prelude to what's going to happen with Percy and the Chinese and the United Arab Emirates. You might want to go out and find a copy of The Monuments of Mars in a fifth edition, because that's the latest.
Yeah.
Because it's an important backstory to what is going to happen, maybe.
Okay. Well, let's sprinkle that prelude to kind of a conclusion, but let's talk about what you have found since the publishing of the book, and the book's 20 plus years old. I have sent you some images from Atlantis Chaos, which I've run by a couple of archaeologists who said they can't tell the difference between the ruins in this area.
Yeah, of course
not.
Well, let me tell you why. Because as we're formulating the independent Mars investigation, remember, at one of the leading think tanks in the world, the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, we had to develop an epistemological criteria for how do you know when you found ruins, right? What are your criteria? You look down from orbit on an alien planet. You know, we have this in wonderful science fiction movies like Forbidden Planet. Remember Forbidden Planet? 1956? Anyway, so you got to develop a criteria. So to me, it was obvious. The only criteria that could be used, that would be objective, that would be universal, that would apply anywhere in the solar system you found them, ruins, would be geometry. Geometry. And my friend Carl Sagan, when he wrote his first book called Cosmos, remember what he said about Earth civilizations and the first primitive Tyros imaging of the Earth, the weather satellite program in the 1960s that took the first decent images where you could see things on the surface? What was he looking for in terms of detecting us, an Earth-bound civilization, from a spacecraft orbiting Earth? What did he say the criteria for extraterrestrial knowledge of Earth civilization was? Geometry. In fact, his quote, which is burned in my memory, is, Earth first manifests itself, Earth civilization first manifests itself in the geometric regularity of its designs. That's all you need to know. You go to any planet in the solar system. Hell, you go to Alpha Centauri. The only way we're ever going to know that somebody is down there, if it's ruins, if they're not really there and sending radio signals and that kind of thing, is by their geometry. And so there's a really, really good reason why when you show that picture from MRO, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, one of the latest crop of state-of-the-art spacecraft to orbit Mars with super telescopes looking down, taking millions of pictures over the last several years with incredible high resolution. The smaller things visible on the MRO images are like 5 inches across. The smallest thing we could see on the Viking images were 50 meters across. And a meter is 3 feet. Yeah. So 150 feet compared to 5 inches, that's how the technology has progressed. Okay, so yes, no wonder that you were able to show a picture to an archaeologist of ancient ruins on Mars, because the technology, the imaging, the public available data is all there, but you gotta know where to look, because you'll never see a snippet of official acknowledgement in any of NASA's writing press releases.
Well, I mean, yeah, I haven't talked to you.
Really there?
I haven't talked to you about this, but I think someone slipped up with this series of images.
No, because go look at Bob Harrison's data. It isn't slipped up. We live in a culture where unless an authority figure gives us permission, we won't see it.
And I'm talking about Atlantis chaos and these ruins.
I am too.
And I have seen, and I have a lot of people that are experts with Photoshop and photo retouching. It looks like, and this is just what these guys, and they're not working for NASA. They're just specialists in the software. It looks like NASA automatically coats everything with a certain tint that has to be removed before you can actually see the data on the surface of the planet.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It appears to be hit and miss. It appears to be part of it is a program on the rover, so it's pre-filtered before it's sent back to Earth.
Right, yeah.
And part of it appears to be done on the ground at JPL for the JPL missions. There are other, you know, agencies that have missions now at Mars, other governments. But members of our team who are imaging experts have come to exactly the same conclusion, and they have developed counter filters to take away the filtering by NASA to see what's really there.
Right.
Now, it's nice that your guys and my guys are the same guys in the sense of they come to the same conclusion and they don't know each other. That's called in science independent confirmation.
Well, one of the guys is somebody you know well, which is Mark Carlotta.
Yeah, well, he's not part of the group that has been talking about the filtering.
Oh,
At least lately. No. Mars was Mark was part of the independent Mars investigation.
Yeah.
Did the first 3D modeling. Now, I would be remiss if I did not mention that during those early years, I had access to a brilliant female artist, fine artist named Kinthea, who lives not far from you and there in Berkeley.
She's in Alameda Albany.
Technically, okay. It's just across the line from Berkeley. Anyway. I remember I used to live in Berkeley, I know. She approached this subject very young, very naive, having no idea what she was getting herself into, dear Kinthea. Anyway, she wound up spending literally thousands of hours as part of the independent Mars investigation using centuries-old three-dimensional clay modeling techniques, which is the summation of hours and hours and hours of literally back-breaking work because you're bending over, you know, a pottery assemblage in clay. She modeled in clay based on the two images, the low sun angle and the high sun angle that Viking had given us decades before. She modeled in three dimensions in clay the face on Mars. And then we photographed it at different, you know, sun angles. She also modeled the so-called cliff, which is behind it if you're in the city of pyramids looking at the face at dawn. All of which is described in great detail in the Monuments of Mars, which is still available, by the way. You can get it from Amazon, North Atlantic, whatever. Yeah. And I have now brought her, you know, decades later into the current iteration of the Mars investigation, which is the Enterprise mission. And she is now working on upgrades of other structures. And we're putting her whole story and Mark's story in the new book because what we did at the end of her literally thousands of hours, backbreaking work, we compared the photographs of her physical analog model with Mark Carlotto's first ever 3D digital model, and they're the same. So two separate investigators, two separate backgrounds, was an optical physicist, the other a fine artist, two different modalities, digital versus clay, on opposite and their work turns out to, when you look at it side by side, to be identical. That in science is called independent confirmation.
let's talk a little bit about what, I mean, let's go back to Cydonia, because there's a couple of ideas or thoughts that I wanted to get from you. Is it your impression after looking at all the anomalous structures in Cydonia, which is the D&M pyramid, the face, the fort, and a lot of other features, is it your opinion that in its heyday, that was kind of a civic center, because there's a lot of open spaces there. Was there any determination on what that may have been when it was actually populated?
Well, now you're going. I'm having to recall our thinking then. This is 1983. Come on, 83, you know.
Well, no, you can come forward and give it to us.
And then there's the nude work that we've come to, because I have I've added members to the team. Some have gone away. Some have come in. You know, there's a brilliant guy named Keith Laney who does incredible imaging enhancement work with NASA data. There's Ron Gerbron. There's, as I said, Bob Harrison. Yeah. There's people all over the planet. They're looking at what the latest data is showing us. Bottom line is, there used to be not only one civilization on Mars, there were a succession of civilizations, each trying to survive a gradually deteriorating Martian environment until they no longer could. They would have died. And they had to come here. So that's why the title of the new book is We Are the Martians. And we can document this with exquisite scientific evidence, specificity. You know, we have got everything except the damn DNA. And it won't be too long, courtesy of Elon Musk, where we'll have that.
Okay. So let's talk about the age. Brandenburg.
Wait, you're passing that by just like, okay.
Well, that's great.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Homo sapiens sapiens on Earth is not from Earth. It's from Mars. This is the big secret. This is why nobody wants to tell anybody any of this officially, because it will blow everything humanity thinks it knows about itself sky high. And nobody can predict where the pieces will come down. And governments, above all, whether they're tyrannies or democracy, the thing they fear the most is instability.
Yeah.
And this is instability a la Brookings with a capital I.
Yeah, I'm not meaning to move too quickly forward, but we've had people like Graham Hancock, who wrote a book called The Mars Mystery, who believes the same thing, which is that
the reason he does it, because he based it on my work.
Well, he believes the descendants of Mars actually did populate portions of Earth, and it is seen in the pre-dynastic period where there's the Giza Plateau with the pyramids there.
Oh, it's much, much, much older than that.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. That was my question, is that Brandenburg says, because of the isotopes, that it must be in the millions. And then there's other people that, like Carlotto, who believes it's probably 50 to tens of millions. What do you think?
That's the right time frame. Remember, in monuments, looking only at the geometry of the city, the face, the cliff there at Cydonia, and looking at when the Earth, because of Mars precession, Mars, like Earth, precesses. Precession is a nodding in addition to the rotation of the planetary axis. So you have a change in what's called obliquity, meaning the tilt between the axis of the rotating planet and its orbit around the sun. With the Earth, that precession takes about 26,000 years to complete once. Mm-hmm. On Mars, I forget what the actual number is. It's roughly, it's around, I think, 48,000 to 80,000, something like that. But what happens is, if you're standing on the surface, it will change how you see the rest of the solar system and where things rise and set. Kind of like Stonehenge, where sunrise comes up over the Healstone every every, you know, that kind of, it's called archaeoastronomical alignment. So I applied terrestrial archaeoastronomy to the ruins I'd found on Mars. And based on that, I was able to work out a date for when whoever was standing in the midst of that vast field of arcologies, those aren't open buildings, those are closed buildings against a hostile exterior environment.
You're talking about Cydonia?
Cydonia.
Okay,
built obviously when Mars no longer had an atmosphere, in the words of Elton John, where you could raise your kids. Right? Mm-hmm. If you went outside, you'd die without protection. But inside, you could live fine. You know the old joke about the 800-pound gorilla, right?
Being in the room?
No. No, that's the elephant. Where does an 800-pound gorilla sleep?
I don't have a clue.
anywhere it wants to.
Okay.
Okay? So where does a high-tech civilization live? Anywhere it wants to. It doesn't care about the exterior environment because it has technology for energy, food, lighting, air pressure, you know, all the prerequisites for life, for our kind of life. You build them in an artificial environment called an arcology, which is a short word that an Italian architect in the 60s coined for what he envisioned as an architectural ecology. Arcology, collapse of the two terms. You build them anywhere in the solar system, you live perfectly fine, provided you have energy, resources, and information. So I've looked at the pyramids on Mars from the beginning as not like Egyptian pyramids, you know, made out of stone. Mm-hmm. No, these are massive, mile high, miles wide, pyramidal shaped structures that used to contain millions of inhabitants. Millions of people living comfortably inside while the winds and the thin atmosphere of Mars are howling deserts outside.
Why did you believe that they were in the body of these giant monuments?
Because you can see the geometry.
Oh, but is there windows and things that you're...
No, there's erosion.
Oh, erosion.
Yeah,
okay.
Erosion, and it basically, that's what you're seeing in the Atlantis chaos image. You're seeing erosion. You know, you're not seeing streets like, you know, suburban Houston tonight, you know, powered down without electricity.
-3 or something.
Yeah, you're seeing the eroded skeletons of a three-dimensional vast mega city complex built in the form of an ancient pyramid. Why a pyramid? Well, I'll tell you what, that's a whole other show. Okay?
Yeah.
We do not
have
time to get diverted by why pyramids.
But I do want to ask you, and this is a tough one. I asked this question to Dr. Avi Loeb, and he, just for your information, and hopefully you can have him on your show, he has in his book a concept of astroarchaeology, which is a whole new field that he believes.
Oh, it isn't. I founded it decades ago.
No, no, but seriously, that is taught in the universities is what he was proposing.
Mm-hmm.
But the question that I asked him is with the Oumuamua, excuse me, I have trouble with that word. The scout, I asked him what he believed the level of civilization was, and he couldn't really answer it. So my question to you is, how advanced do you think the last surviving civilization on Mars was? Was it 100,000 years in advance of us? 1,000 years? What?
No, it was probably contemporary. Remember that old joke back in the I think it was the 70s when there was a there it was the Carter administration, the 70s, and Seattle, Washington had huge economic problems, Boeing and all that. Remember the joke that was going around? In fact, I think they put it on a billboard in Seattle because Boeing was losing employees and there was terrible economic distress and, you know, what they used to call a recession. And somebody decided to pay for a billboard and they put it up in Seattle and it basically was based on all these people leaving Boeing, you know, not having jobs, not having, you know, building airplanes anymore. And it said, "Would the last person to leave Seattle please turn out the lights?" Hmm. The same thing happened with Mars. Mars environment, a la Lowell. Remember Lowell? Mm-hmm. And the Martians desperately building canals to bring water to a dying planet with cities near the equator, etc. That's the Mars we've now discovered. That really happened in ancient history, going back millions of years. And the last civilizations probably were at our level able to develop a space program with rockets because they lost all knowledge of the physics of anti-gravity and all that super cool advanced. And they left Mars, and obviously everybody on Mars ultimately died. Hmm. So we're seeing in the newest data from both the Russian missions, the Japanese missions, the American missions, we're seeing evidence of successive epochs of civilization getting more primitive and more primitive and more primitive as the planet gets worse and worse and worse. And finally, the last folks to leave didn't turn out the lights. Those left behind, they died. And that's all there, totally preserved. Because there's no oxygen, so Mars is like a planetary museum. When Elon Musk gets to Mars, because you know he's going to get there before NASA can get out of bed, right? Serious, very serious. He's going to find confirmation of the things he's not willing to talk about in public yet, because guess what? There will be bodies, there will be graves, there will be cemeteries, there will be all the accoutrements of what we think of as civilization perfectly preserved, because Mars basically has a mostly CO2 atmosphere and the rest is nitrogen and there's a wisp of oxygen, and if there's any protection like burial, it'll be totally preserved. Guess what? One of the first things he's going to do is find bodies, and when they do the DNA analysis, the shock is going to be, oh my God, they're us.
That's going to freak everybody out if he finds bodies, that's going to just freak the world out.
So, we have Egyptian mummies. We will have mummies.
A Martian body found and analyzed. That's crazy. I have to stop you for a second, but hey, Richard, let's go back for a minute.
It's projected science.
I know. Come on.
This whole conversation is crazy. Do not program your audience to think anything I've discussed is out of bounds, unscientific, whatever. It's not politically correct yet, but it's the truth, and I will live to see it vindicated.
I have nothing to say negative about discovering bodies. I just think that it's going to freak people out. I want to go back to your
– Oh, wait a minute. Didn't Elon Musk say just 2 days ago, 3 days ago that he's an alien? Isn't he telegraphing what I've been telling you?
I didn't
for the last couple,
it.
3 hours?
He was joking when he said
no. He's not joking.
Okay.
Anybody visiting Earth is related to us. Mm-hmm. What do you think Neil Armstrong meant when he said, remember I was there? Not quite there. I was on Earth. He was on the moon. You know, that's one small step for man. Mm-hmm. One giant leap for mankind. And there was no missing A. Never was. Why did this become controversial? Because Neil Armstrong was telling us the truth in code. One small step for man. That's us on Earth. One giant leap for mankind. All of the other relatives of Homo sapiens who live all over the damn galaxy, because we're not limited to the speed of light, and used to live on Mars and were our ancestors. It's right there in Neil Armstrong's famous words, first modern human on the moon. I'm sorry if this is dislocating to you, but
No. I hear all this. I I don't have a problem with it. I'm just curious in your statement that you made that you believe that the last vestiges of Martians were equal technologically than we are today.
Pretty much, give or take.
Well, but I mean, if you look at the sheer size of these ruins, especially
No. Those are much, 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 much older.
Oh, okay. So
remember, if you land on Mars right now, let's assume Elon is successful, and in the next 5-10 years we get there.
Mm-hmm.
You will be walking amidst. I mean, any terrestrial archaeologist will give everything to go there because, unlike on Earth, where erosion rapidly destroys earlier civilizations unless they're buried, everything is all there. The ruins from millions of years ago are side by side with ruins from 30,000 years ago.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear.
Because there's no erosion, and the ancient stuff, the really ancient super cool stuff, is eroding out of these vast arcologies. And when you see it in the Mars Curiosity rover images, it looks brand new because it's been protected for millions of years by being in mud and earth, which only now is slowly, slowly eroding. So you can't tell in the Curiosity images a new artifact from a really, really ancient artifact because they both look kind of the same because the ancient ones were protected until relatively recently when they were eroded out. I call it, falling out of the woodwork.
I mean, those early works are mind-blowing. I mean, the DNA pyramid and...
Yeah, mile high. Just calculate the volume.
I mean,
what's
it's
the
incredible.
Volume of something like that? Oh, it's cubic miles.
Yeah.
Whole cities. And we now have some even better dating, which will come out in the new book. We've been doing a lot of science. Remember, I try not to say things that we can't document.
Yeah.
And in a 3-hour radio show, I can't obviously document anything, but I can point to sources, and the first source would be the monuments of Mars.
Mm-hmm. Well, your ex-author Mike Barra has been on the show and shown in his book the infrastructure, huge infrastructure supporting beams on collapsed buildings that are huge.
Yeah, which book are you referring to from Mike?
I think it was his book on. I don't have it in front of me. His most recent book on Mars, where he talks about Kennedy and stuff like that. But he shows photos of the tops of some of these buildings being destroyed. There's one building that is like called the Eye of Horus. I think it's called that by some of, and in that image, part of the
these are all terrestrial terms for something on Mars. We have no idea.
Yeah,
we're
making it up to identify it. These are all Earth. Yeah, but there's superstructure that is massive, that has collapsed, that he highlights, and the amount of technology.
Look at Bob Harrison's website. Where do you think Mike got his data from? Bob Harrison.
Yeah, I don't know Bob Harrison.
Sent you his link to Sidonia Quest.
Oh, that's – okay. Yeah,
that's Robert Harrison.
Okay.
Detailed analysis of these ancient arcologies. Yes, there was an ancient period of a super civilization, not just on Mars, but through the entire solar system. We've got NASA data showing ruins on the moon, ruins on Mercury, ruins on the moons of Saturn and Jupiter, ruins throughout the whole solar system, ruins on Ceres, the biggest asteroid, ruins on – there are ruins everywhere out there.
It's
Why doesn't anybody but us know it? Because they're waiting for an authority figure to tell them the truth.
Be interesting to hear President Biden talk about it. That'd be crazy.
Well – you want to make another bet? We already have one dinner on the – right. The other day when asked, the press secretary was asked about the Artemis program, which is the follow-on to Apollo, initiated by President Trump. Okay. give me a back and forth here. I'm groping in the dark.
I hear
you. Do you know what I'm referencing? Because if you don't, I have to explain.
I don't, no.
Oh, so you don't know that President Trump initiated a follow-on to Project Apollo to get back to the moon when what he thought would be the end of his second term by 2024, mm-hmm. Okay? And all of NASA was dedicated to making this happen. It was begun, you know, several years ago in his first term, his only term. What you don't know is the backstory, because we prepared a three-hour briefing video called The Presidential Briefing. And I, through a mutual friend to Donald Trump, who lives in New York, who's been quietly supporting our work, we got it directly to Donald Trump's attention, new president of the United States, back in 2017, somewhere around there. 2 weeks after he got the video, he called up NASA, which had planned to go back to the moon in 2028. Remember that? And he said to them, no, we got to do this by 2024. Why 2024? Because that would be on his watch at the end of his second term. Furthermore, what impelled him to want to get back to the moon before he was an ex-president? Because we laid out in this three-hour presidential briefing video, which is available on the Other Side of Midnight website, what's there? What incredible history he could lay claim to as the president of the United States who had opened the solar system to our real history. Long silence.
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, I don't know about these, if they are published or not, or
if what's published.
It was okay.
What? If what's published?
What Trump's doing, trying to go back to the moon earlier than NASA has scheduled.
Well, he's no longer president. Remember, he was voted out.
Right.
If you go to the other side of midnight.com, there at the top on every page, there is a link where you can get a copy of the same briefing I prepared specifically for the President of the United States. Remember Reagan's space panel, space commission? Right. I have a history of kind of trying to deal with the top to make NASA behave, you know, to the American taxpayer, to the American people. And I told him in the video, I said, all you have to do is pick up the phone and call Bridenstine, who was his, you know, NASA administrator, who quit when President Biden took over. I was very intrigued that Bridenstine just quit, would not stay on. Other administrators have stayed on between administrations, mm-hmm. not Bridenstine for whatever reason. Okay. Anyway, that document is available to the American people. Anybody can get access to it. It's available. Just click on the link and it'll take you, you know, through where you can, you know, buy a copy and continue supporting our research. It's a very modest price. I think it's under $20. I think it's $19.50, I think. Mm-hmm. And you probably wonder why that number. No, you don't wonder why that number. Okay.
Yeah.
The point is, we had a real effect. And no one's going to admit it yet because, of course, it's not a real thing. Now, the other day, the new president's press secretary was asked by a reporter, you know, what is the president going to do with Project Artemis? And she demurred. And then she came back the next day and she said, all excited, oh, it's to go to the moon. It's going to land the first woman. And the president is totally behind it. And then the reporter also asked the question, what's he going to do about President Trump's Space Force? And again, there was this day-long pause because this press secretary actually goes and checks with the president she's representing. And she comes out the second day and she says, oh, he's definitely going to continue the Space Force.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Put those two things together. Again, the way you deal with Washington is you have to read the breadcrumbs.
Right.
Because there are two levels of the conversation. There's, as my friend, old friend Jerry Glenn used to say, the in-house conversation. And then there's the outhouse conversation, which is with all the rest of us, you know. And he always used to be careful, you know, he said things like, well, just make sure that your in-house conversation doesn't become an outhouse conversation, with the double entendre fully up front. So this administration is going to continue President Trump's space policies, right? Now, you can't imagine two more diametrically opposed administrations. Look at how many executive orders President Biden has signed contravening the things that Trump put in place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at what he's not changing. Why is he not changing these? Because they're super important to the future destiny of the human race. Not just Americans, everybody. And they will unify everybody when the decision is made to make it public. And the Chinese now, in an elegant squeeze play, have basically given us until May, plus a couple of months. You know, you let the Chinese run around with the rover, and they are planning to announce ruins. Now, how do I know this? Remember, I try never to say anything that isn't documented by evidence. Because the official Chinese poster for their mission to Mars with their rover features their rover sitting in front of a set of ancient Martian ruins photographed in the background from the Curiosity NASA mission.
Oh, my God. I have to take a look at that. I haven't seen that.
I will send it to you.
Yeah, let's
I will
quote
also
that.
Send you a side-by-side comparison, which one of my team members, Andrew Curry, has done, which shows how you look at the ruins. Because remember, ruins, most people aren't familiar with looking at ruins. You know, we look around us, nothing's in ruin, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're only used to seeing new stuff, crisp, sharp geometry. So again, the way you tell ruins from just dirt and rocks, you go back to Sagan. The first evidence of extraterrestrial, you know, life on Earth comes from the geometric regularity of its design.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll send you that image, and that's how I know that the Chinese are planning to spring the biggest surprise on the human race ever, unless NASA beats them to it.
What do we know about the Chinese rover, though? Is it have a specific a mission to, I mean, like our rover, the Perseverance?
It's for instruments. It's got cameras. It's got sensors. It's got spectrometers. It's got, I think it's got underground radar, you know, deep imaging radar.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they have a radar imager on their rover?
Yeah, ground penetrating radar.
Yeah, they're going to go look for buried cities.
Yeah.
Duh, wouldn't you?
That's great. I didn't know about their – I mean, they have the resources to really put a good, highly sophisticated rover on the planet.
Yeah,
and we've seen evidence from the moon. Their imaging is excellent.
And their imaging revealed, again, through the People's, you know, Republican Army, ruins on the moon. But because nobody told you officially that that's what they're photographing, nobody paid attention except us.
Hmm. Hey, before we leave the question of artificiality, you spend a great deal of time talking about and revealing a tunnel system on the planet Mars, and it looks fairly sophisticated. Did you guys ever find a image using ground penetrating radar that was aboard any of the satellites, or was it just speculation based on the close-ups of the imaging of these tunnels?
Well, the radar, of course, will not give you the resolution that imaging will, even, you know, millimeter wave radar. The MRO mission, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter mission from NASA, which has been orbiting Mars for at least 10 years, it has a sophisticated radar on board to ping the planet from orbit, but it's called SHARAD. That's an acronym. I forget what it stands for. It's relatively short waves. It only can penetrate a few hundred feet under the surface. And, of course, given that it's limited, you know, from orbit, 180 miles up, its resolution is lousy. So you really, unless you know what you're looking at, nothing's going to pop out at you. However, the Chinese put an imaging radar on their rover, both Chang 3 and Chang 4 on the far side of the moon, and I've seen some of that data, and what they're interpreting for the public as layers of basalt actually have geometry, so we're looking at buried cities. And that's what I expect that they will be finding on their rover, because they put, unlike us, we've never put a radar on our rovers. I don't know whether Percy has one or not. I forget. It has a very good complement of instruments. It may have onboard radar, but I really don't remember. The point is, if you're going to look for buried stuff, you're going to want ground-penetrating radar of a short wavelength, and then you're going to reconstruct 3D imaging, just like we do with ground-penetrating radar here. I mean, most of the best archaeology is now done with super high-tech tools, where you don't even have to excavate manually. You know, you run across it with radar, and then you pick the spot where you excavate for ground truth confirmation. As opposed to the old days, where you'd have archaeologists heading a team of locals, literally moving thousands of tons of soil and sand and rock to unbury stuff. Now you can do it with sophisticated ground-penetrating radar, and then you go to the spot where you think something really important is, and you physically excavate there. No, we are going to have some stunning surprises in the next few months. Stunning.
I'm concerned. I mean, I would love for the Chinese to force NASA to reveal the artificiality of Mars, but I just have this odd feeling that, and it could be not justified, but that this whole Mars question is canvassed by some kind of a protocol or agreement between the countries that it will not be revealed because it will freak everybody out.
Okay,
but I don't think the Chinese care.
You believe the Brookings is still correct?
Well, I don't know if the Brookings applies to the Chinese, but. You know, and it shouldn't, because that's a United States document and it applies to our culture. The Chinese with their...
Wait. Remember what Chinese culture is based on. What do the Chinese themselves believe about themselves?
You're asking questions that I have no...
You will obviously do some digging after the show. The Chinese in their own literature, in their own... most ancient writings, in their mythologies, in their, you know, cultural identity, they believe they came from heaven, which is not on earth. So for them, it'll be a confirmation of their religious beliefs. Ta-da! Anyway, okay. We're in the end game. And the reason I say that with confidence is because if this wasn't their agenda, why would they have posted a poster of their lander and rover situated against an official NASA image stolen from NASA of a set of ruins on a hill just behind the artwork of their rover? When you see the imagery, you're going to go, oh, my God.
I mean, what is the history of China's interaction with Mars? Have they have sent a satellite, right, prior to the rover launch?
No, the Japanese. The Chinese have never been to Mars.
Well, this is really strange, then, why they would spend countless hundreds of millions,
why is it
if
strange?
Not billions. Because they have not, they have no previous experience.
It doesn't matter. If you're a developing civilization wanting to become the dominant planetary partner on Earth, you know, like remember 20th century was called the American century. Well, the Chinese want the 21st century to be the Chinese century, and
that's exactly right. I think they want to step on America.
Yeah, and obviously we're in deep competition.
Yeah,
and part of that is of course encompassing space. They know what's out there. Give me a break. They know exactly everything. For one thing, I told them. You know, they read everything the West writes. I wrote a very long, detailed piece on what the Chinese were revealing unofficially, but through official sources, vis-a-vis the moon. They know what's there. It's only about when does it get revealed.
Because when it does, it's going to be forever. It will forever change us. It will.
Which is exactly what Brookings was terrified about.
Yeah.
But it's all in how it's handled. Remember, people don't have their own ideas because most of them have no time to look at any of this stuff. They take their cues from their authority figures. And the Chinese are simply going to say to its people, hey, look, our ancestors were right. We came from heaven, i.e. Mars.
Yeah.
And the United States, the Americans, in order to keep from being exposed of having covered this up for 50-some years, will have to do it first, or they do it together. And it's, you know, why do you think the United Arab Emirates is there? And remember, Israel was supposed to have a spacecraft in the mix this time to make it a joint effort of mankind representing all of the major racial groups on Earth. We're at the verge of really big things. Or as then Vice President Biden said to President Obama, when the the Obamacare legislation was passed, you know, remember his stage whisper, this is a big blankety blank deal. This is a big blankety blank deal, and it's about to unfold at a time when humanity desperately needs to realize we're all in this together against a stunning unknown.
Let's talk about a scenario. Okay, so we find artificiality on Mars, the evidence of a dead civilization.
No. We confirm. We've already found it.
Well, I mean, the world finds out and says, okay, wow, look at this.
Yep.
Does this open the door for what we are currently dealing with on the planet? I mean, we got a little bit when the Pentagon revealed that the Navy had interacted with UFOs. That was a big revelation.
Mm-hmm. On the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah, that was huge. So,
by the way, have you heard the latest rumor? Which is incredibly conflicted, and I'm going to deal with this coming Sunday. Let's see, when does this program air on your show?
The first one? Saturday the 20th, and then the part two.
Okay, yeah. Well, on the 20th, we're dealing on the other side of midnight with Perseverance, the Chinese, all of what we talked about, with imagery, because we should have images by then. And on Sunday, we're dealing with all this bizarre UFO stuff quietly going on in the Pentagon while we've all been, you know, kind of paying attention to politics in Washington, because we're on the verge of major new revelations there. Have you heard the rumor that the Pentagon inadvertently admitted it's been analyzing UFO technology from Roswell?
Oh, yes.
You think that's all an accident?
I talked about this last week. Yeah. Phil Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, this is a continuation of the work that he did.
Remember, in politics, a la FDR, there's no such thing as coincidence.
Yeah.
This is a carefully planned disclosure curve, boys and girls. We're about to get pregnant with a capital P.
Yeah. So how does it play out? Just slowly trickle, and then
You look, if the Chinese and NASA agree to announce jointly that they've got rovers on the surface, and that's the best way it can happen because you want to knit the world together with this, that they found evidence of an ancient civilization. I mean, come on, Katie, bar the door. Nothing that we think we know now is going to extend past that moment, and everything will be up for grabs, and everybody will be saying, oh my God, who's out there? What's out there? And remember the Nimitz. Remember the Roosevelt. Remember the pilots. Remember the drip, drip, drip. Even at the height of the COVID crisis last year, the Pentagon comes out and says, you know that Navy footage of, you know, UAPs? I love the way the government thinks they can change the mindset by changing the initials. Yeah. UAPs, you know, are really UFOs, except they're not UFOs. They're IFOs because they know where they come from. Are those folks in those ships, you know, playing fun and games with the, our carrier battle groups? Are they doing several things like messaging? Like, our toys are bigger than your toys, so you can't compete. And two, are they waiting for humanity to discover by its own technology that it's not alone, and then they show up and say, you want the rest of the story? That's how I think it's going to unfold.
I just think that this Pentagon revelation was more disclosure. They can't.
Of course.
They have got to begin to release this, because how many, since the modern era, the UFOs have been in our sky. There's stories of landings. In some cases, never. It doesn't seem to be.
This is exactly out of Brookings. Go read Brookings. It's the prescription for how to keep civilization from collapsing when the real is now widely known.
Yeah, but you outline where we're at now on a conscious emotional level. We can handle this. We can handle evidence. I think we can.
I mean,
the churches maybe won't be able to.
Actually. You know, Art Bell and I used to have this interesting contradiction of statements on this. Art was of the opinion this was terrifying. Brookings was right. We should never be revealed because people would just go crazy. And the religious people most of all. And my position is diametrically opposed. You know, based on what I have seen in the last 4 years regarding the presidency of Trump and the whole QAnon phenomenon, and people who are claiming now that the insurrection on Capitol Hill was all a hoax, fake, what the religious communities, the super religious communities, those who are dogmatic will do, is they will simply close the bubble. And this information will not even make it into the bubble. They will ignore it, totally ignore it. They won't just be affected. They will not be affected by it because in their universe, you know, God created us, put us here, that kind of thing. The rest of the culture will evolve, will accept this, will move on, and will take advantage of the stunning science and engineering breakthroughs that are going to save the damn planet, prevent thermonuclear war, and give us an open avenue to the stars, those of us that want it.
That's so funny you mentioned the nuclear war, because years ago when we did the expo, we would have panel discussions from somewhat noted abductees, including the most famous, a guy named Travis Walton.
I remember them.
And he said in his, and that wasn't him, but others were saying that the ETs were telling them, you got to keep an eye on your planet. You cannot let the Earth fall into disrepair, global warming, so forth and so on. And the nuclear issue is deadly. And that was a long, long time ago. That was the typical statement. Now, it's like it's all coming to roost. It's like, yeah, you do have to keep an eye on the planet. Look what's going on right now. And the alien brethren, you know, for them to show up now and go, look, we told you about this. Get your act together or you're not going to be around much longer.
You see, you know? if this were inverted, I've always maintained that the only way around Brookings is if we discover it first, meaning we, the human race.
Yeah.
Brookings, Margaret Mead, Dr. Mead, was terrified. I used to work at the American Museum, remember? She was an anthropologist working in the same museum in an upstairs wing. And she worked late at night, and I worked late at night. And I would meet her in the halls, you know, as she was walking around with that big walking stick, and we'd have some interesting conversations. I, of course, had no idea what was being hidden. So I was coming at this from the naive, believing everything NASA was telling us. But I talked to her, and she really believed that if UFOs showed up and announced who they were, it would destroy us. Just the shock and the cultural devolution like she saw in Samoa. And I then formulated over the years a counter hypothesis that the way we retain our integrity as a species on this planet is we reach out and discover the evidence first. And that's with the unmanned robotic probes. And once we have the reality of ruins, remember, ruins are not threatening. Ruins aren't, you know, don't hold ray guns. Ruins can't destroy the earth. Ruins can't invade you know, and become like the Body Snatchers movie.
It's like an easy way to realize that there's others out there.
Exactly. It's the only way to roll.
It's the easier. It's a easy medicine to consume.
Well, it's time release aspirin, or it's getting a little bit pregnant a little bit at a time, which is of course physically impossible.
Right.
At some point after that process is underway, they, whoever's been zipping around in our skies, and there's probably more than one group, will introduce themselves, but not before. Again, in the Hoagland model, because that way we remain in control, and ultimately it will satisfy the government criteria, which George Bush enunciated as the Berlin Wall is collapsing. Some reporter said, "Mr. President, why aren't you celebrating?" And he said, "Instability, government instability. That's what we don't want." So this is the safe way to get pregnant. Us and the Chinese discover, oh my God, look what's here. And then they'll go back and they'll look in the files. Well, look what we found in the files. Isn't it, you know, it's just scientific. You're being conservative. You're not leaping. And people, this is why I'm going to win my dinner, will buy it hook, line, and sinker because they're going to want to believe it. You know why? Because they don't want to believe, they will not want to believe that for 50 years, their government, their taxpayer dollars went to a lie. And we know this because of how the past 4 years of the Trump administration have unfolded, and this dedicated group of people who, regardless, come hell or high water, they are locked into being Trump supporters regardless of the evidence. So we know people's psychology are that they can build their own sandcastles and believe in them and get through the next day.
Hey, in the time we have left, Richard.
Oh, my God, look at the time.
Yeah, we're almost there. We're 15 minutes left. I want you to provide a scenario of a not so much first contact, but first revelation. Let's start with an unveiling on Mars. And what is that? We've talked a little bit about it, but how does that unfold? And what are the next steps when we uncover ruins on Mars?
Well, as I've said many, 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 many times, I'm a generalist, right? I look at systems, whole systems, and how they're interrelated. All of these questions, these pregnant questions, are all ultimately connected. I mean, do you really think Abby Loeb's book, extolling as the chairman of the Harvard Astronomy Department, officially that there are alien civilizations out there, and oh my God, they sent us a probe? You think that's just an accident? This is happening in the same time frame as the U.S. Navy is admitting, oh, there's official gun camera footage of unidentified flying objects zipping around our carrier battle groups, and we have no idea where they come from, but they're real. You think those two things are just accidental?
Yeah.
Go back to FDR. In politics, there's no such thing as coincidence. This is a planned disclosure curve rising to meet real data. I mean, many, many years ago, people said, well, why aren't you more into the whole UFO thing? And I said, based on my research experience in UFOs decades ago at the Springfield Museum, when I realized it was a total dead end, it was a lost cause, it was hopeless, it was pointless, the fix was in. You would never get the truth by pursuing UFOs, ever, 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 ever. Yeah. But when the data was presented to me, I realized the end run around the UFO impasse. I mean, how many sheets of blacked out paper did Stanton Friedman have to hold up in front of television cameras before people would say, good grief, Stan, go back to physics, you know? Yeah.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, of course. He was a very
He wrote too many books. I always talked to him. I said, you know, you got too many books on Roswell.
Well,
how many times can we, you know, Roswell? But Roswell's an important
Wait.
Event.
The rumor now is the Pentagon's been looking at Roswell artifacts, so the loop is closed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. The way out of this box is if we reach out and discover ourselves, we're not alone in the safest way possible, which is through millions of years old dead ruins on a planet that never gets closer than 35 million miles. And we don't do it as Americans or as Israelis or as, you know, South Africans. We do it as a planet representing the three or the five major racial groups are all now represented at Mars tonight. And tomorrow afternoon, the biggie, Perseverance, Percy, short for Percival Lowell, is going to land, and the soap opera begins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like your scenario of the Chinese almost saying either you reveal or we will.
Well, why did they put their damn spacecraft in front of a set of ruins taken by a NASA spacecraft? Come on.
I got to look at that. That's amazing.
Oh, you're going to absolutely freak out when you see it.
Yeah.
In a nice way.
Yeah.
Not in a Brookings way. In a nice
way. So again, the scenario I'm asking you to and you're presenting it, the scenario is we find these ancient ruins. The world is
stupefied. Absolutely
shocked.
Stupefied. Okay.
Completely shocked.
Who is the first person who will make comments about them?
Well, I think Biden will say something.
No. I didn't say official. I said the first person.
I don't know. I mean, I would think somebody in some kind of role in government would have to
say. Elon Musk. He's going. He's got the technology. He just needs a real reason to have more funding to go faster. I mean, this is going to be the neatest thing to happen to Musk you could imagine, unless he's part of the plan to carefully bring it all to fruition, which, of course, is my model. Did you hear about – forget the tweet where he said he's an alien, finally, okay? Remember that came up before and he completely, you know, poo-pooed it, and suddenly he volunteers it the other night on Twitter? Why is he doing that? I know your model is he's just having a joke. No, it's part of Brookings. It's part of getting people used to the unthinkable. He actually said, as part of an earlier discussion, that there could be aliens among us and we would never know. Now, how can you have aliens among humans and us not know?
Based I gotta find that. If he said that, there's been other people that have said
no,
that.
No, he said that. It's on the record. It's on his. He has very interesting.
That there are aliens among us.
Yes, and we would never know. He proposed it as an idea. Remember, this is all about getting people used to from authority figures.
Yeah.
And you would certainly assume Elon is an authority figure on this, right? It's the perfect non-governmental way to disclose without disclosing to get. It's Brookings. It's. Using a bad analogy, you know how you'll boil a frog without him knowing he's dying? You raise the temperature of the pot slowly so he never notices until it's too late.
Yeah, right.
Well, you can invert that idea. How do you get a culture assimilated to an amazing set of realities that are totally in contradiction to almost everything they've ever been taught? Brookings said you have to take decades to acculturate the culture and get them used to all this. And that's all what Star Wars and Star Trek and all that other stuff has been about for decade after decade after decade. Mm-hmm. Now we're in the real world. And someone is trying to reach me. We will ignore that, okay? We're in the real world. As you can see, we're kind of at Command Central here. and see, they don't know I'm on the air. So... And I didn't think to mute the phone, so they'll eventually go away. Anyway, so we've reached the point now in this model. Remember, this is all a model where once we have confirmation that there's really stuff on Mars to go and find out about as a planet? Well, Musk is kind of neutral. Why is Musk neutral? He's not U.S. government. He's from South Africa, right? He's deeply involved in Chinese industry and Tesla and marketing and all that. You know, he's kind of the perfect bridge, the civilian bridge, who has the technology, the expertise, the background, the company, SpaceX, to do something amazing, which is to take civilians to Mars in the reasonable future, which is going to be at least half a decade, maybe longer. And in that time, you can imagine the unmanned probes will do digging and looking, and there'll be other unmanned probes sent. And then Musk, because governments can't do this on this turnaround, Musk can. It will be a civilian Musk expedition that gets to Mars first, representing humanity, not governments, not politics, not a particular persuasion of politics. I mean, look, he's proposing to do a mission with the Starship around the moon. And who did he hang out with to be his first passenger but an artist from Japan and seven more civilians? And of course, they're going to see stunning things on the moon as they loop around, visible on every smartphone they carry and every broadcast they do. I mean, we're at the edge of stunning revelations of what's really in the solar system. And it may be spearheaded. Politics are very hard to predict sometimes, but it may be spearheaded by a civilian who already has a bright, shiny red roaster orbiting between Earth and Mars. Doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. Before we run out of time,
we got 6 minutes left. Now it's fine. Yeah. Did you see the first interview that Musk did with Joe Rogan a few years ago, maybe a year or so?
Oh, yeah.
The one where it blew everybody's mind. He's smoking, you know, pot on live radio.
Yeah, and he got in a lot of trouble for that.
The Security Exchange Commission freaked out, and they tried to remove him as CEO of his companies and all that crap.
Well, he lost serious money, but then he got it back.
He gained it back. You know, that was all a careful plan. Musk doesn't do anything without a plan. Come on. You don't become the richest man in the world trying to take humanity off the planet and save them by sending them to another planet by being an idiot. So nothing – remember, back to FDR. In politics, there are no such things as coincidences. So he smokes pot on the air, live, and everybody freaks out. Now, flash forward the film. A year later, he did, I think last week, another Joe Rogan interview for – I think it's 3 hours. In the middle of the interview, which I've not seen yet. I've only had people tell me this because it's so new that I actually hadn't had time to even look at it before we, you know, did this show. Joe Rogan suddenly, with Elon Musk sitting there, and this time they're sipping brandy. They're not toking it up. They're sipping because that's more politic, more mainstream. Yeah. Nobody will freak out. They'll focus on the message. All right. Joe Rogan brings up Richard C. Hoagland.
You're kidding me.
In front of Elon Musk. It's on video.
Oh, I have to see this.
And spend several minutes dissing me in every way possible.
Rogan's dissing you or Musk?
No. Rogan is dissing me. Musk is just sitting there impassive.
Oh, okay.
Not saying anything.
Is he dissing your book, Monuments, or is it just general?
Yeah. And my whole research in 30 years, for whatever. And then he shows a picture of the monuments of Mars, a city on the edge of forever. So in this world of inverted, convoluted, nothing is as it appears, Mr. Mulder, politics, was Rogan really doing us a favor? Because by showing the image of the cover of the monuments of Mars, there's an awful lot of people out there with something called a computer or a smartphone who can go Google and go to Wikipedia, which of course is trash. Nothing on Wikipedia is true, so don't bother with that. But they'll find monuments. They'll find the Enterprise mission. They'll find the body of our research, the independent Mars investigation. They'll find everything we've done about Mars, And they'll realize as they're finding all this, oh my God, this was laid out in front of Elon Musk, the guy who wants to take us to Mars. Can you say a positive conspiracy?
Yeah.
And I'll leave it there.
That's pretty amazing. So, all right. Hey, Richard Hoagland, it's been a pleasure. As always, great to catch up with you. Again, for those of you listening, this tome, and it is a tome, 500 pages, The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever, Richard C. Hoagland. And I suggest you get it. It's going to be something you cannot read in a day. You got to hold on to it and absorb it. Richard, let people know how they can get a hold of you. What's your website again?
I have two. EnterpriseMissions with an S.com. That's the original Enterprise Mission website with all the research, tons and tons of papers and documents and photographs and references, evidence. And the other is my show, The Other Side of Midnight.com, which broadcasts live coast to coast and around the world. I'm in 193 countries on Saturday night and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific.
Oh, okay. Excellent. All right. So they'll get an update and don't forget to send me some photographs.
I will send you. You better be sitting down when you open the files. Right.
Okay. Well, listen, we got some time, but, you know, if there is a revelation, I will gladly purchase dinner for you. And I expect the same. I expect the same from you. If what I, well, I don't know. I didn't really predict anything. You'll have to come up with at least a good bottle of wine.
I guarantee you, you are going to be delighted in losing.
Oh, definitely. I'll be happy. I'll buy you a good California wine to go with your fish or whatever. Richard, continued success. Great speaking with you. We'll have to have you on again.
Thanks, Cliff.
I can't get a answer to when the second book, the follow-up to The Monuments on Mars, will be coming out. It sounds like, and I've talked to his producer a number of times, it sounds like it might come out in the fall. When it does, we'll have Richard back to talk a little bit about what the contents are. I would like to see whatever he's come up with as soon as possible, but it remains to be seen actually when the due date is and who will be the publisher. So there you go, Richard Hoagland, The Monuments of Mars, his perspective, everything in between. So I can't say it enough. It really adds a whole dimension to the question of artificial structures and the remains of a unknown civilization on the planet. Who is going to be the first one to unveil it? Is it going to be the Chinese? Is it going to be the Arabs? Is it going to be the United States, NASA, and JPL working to unveil? Now, how would NASA do it? Oh, hey, in their report, oh, big news. We have found what looks like the remains of buildings, or we found the remains of machinery. We thought it was the rocket stage of an early satellite, and it's not. It's something else. I mean, what is the disclosure? What is the how is it going to be presented? Is really an interesting question. You know, is it going to be kind of like Dr. Loeb, where we get hints of a extraterrestrial craft coming into our cosmos? In the case of Mars, we have machines on the ground. We have satellite orbiting the planet, imaging literally every section, every square mile. How does it get revealed is something to consider. And I would love to have an ex-JPL person come and explain how they think that's going to be revealed or what their guess would be. Of course, if you work for NASA, if you work for JPL, you are signing a non-disclosure agreement. So, you know, and we've seen this with different people. The best case scenario I can think of is Colonel Corso, who wrote the book The Day After Roswell. He was on his deathbed. He was in the military. He was an intelligence officer. By the way, if you don't have that book, The Day After Roswell by Philip Corso, Colonel Corso, came out, Jesus, I think it's been maybe seven or 10 years. I don't know. An amazing book. How basically it foreshadows how a lot of our technology came to being. And it's through reverse engineered downed alien craft. As crazy as that sounds, what he writes about is shocking. And the general public didn't get wind of it because they squelched this book the day after Roswell. So it makes great sense to me. And again, the only reason he was able to publish it is because he was dying and or he was very ill. And he decided to put it together, published it, and it was a shocker. So this is how the scenario with Mars goes, that an engineer or one of the team members who was part of the early satellite program or one of the early rovers decides to divulge what he knows or what she knows on what is on the surface of the planet Mars. So we don't know. We don't know how it's going to come about, but whatever, however it is revealed will be fantastic and wonderful, and it will change us. So be prepared for the unveiling. Hey, if you're enjoying Earth Ancients, please consider becoming a subscriber. For as little as $5 a month, you support the work we do here on the program. And, you know, when you subscribe, not only do you support Earth Ancients, but you keep us going. You keep us booking speakers into the future. We have a ton of new and upcoming authors, research investigators, and experts in their field. Some scientists, some are just dedicated researchers. It makes it very, very interesting. And when you support us through a $5, $10, or $15 donation each month, you really help us keep things rolling. To become a subscriber, go to Patreon. That's patreon.com/Earth Ancients, and you will see the registration page. And we also have a whole bunch of free stuff for you. We got 10 ebooks, including A.V. Loeb's new book called Extraterrestrial, based on his interview we just did a couple weeks ago, and lots of other items as a thank you for joining us. So consider it. I hope you will. Patreon.com/Earth Ancients. And become a subscriber. Okay, that's it for this segment, the special edition. And we have a new show for you Saturday, March 6th. So we'll talk to you then.